Sutta Goswami said, Saha,
He
Markandeya.
Evam,
in this way,
Anubhuya,
experiencing,
Idam,
this,
Narayana
Nirmitam,
manufactured by the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Narayana.
The opulent
exhibition.
Yogamayaha.
Of his internal mystic energy.
Come
to him.
Eva.
Indeed.
Sharanam.
For shelter.
Yayo.
He went.
Translation.
Sutta Goswami
said,
the Supreme Lord
Narayan
had arranged this
opulent
display
of his
bewildering potency.
Markandeya
Rishi, having experienced
it, took
shelter of the
Lord.
Text 2,
we can say it
together.
Shri
Markandeya Vacha
Prapanosmi
Angri
Mulam Te
Prapana
Bhayadam
Hare
Yam
Mayaya
Pivi
Buddha
Muyanti
Jnana
Kashaya.
Translation.
Shri
Markandeya
said,
O Lord
Hari, I
take shelter of
the souls of
your lotus feet,
which
bestow
fearlessness
upon
all
who surrender
to them.
Even
the great
demigods are
bewildered
by your
illusory
energy,
which appears
to them
in
the
guise
of knowledge.
Report.
Conditioned
souls
are attracted
to material
sense gratification,
and thus
they meticulously
study
the workings
of nature.
Although
they
appear to
be advancing
in scientific
knowledge,
they
become
increasingly
entangled
in their
false
identification
with
the
material
body,
and
therefore
increasingly
merge
into
ignorance.
So
yesterday we read
the whole
last chapter,
and
it ended
up with
Markandeya
being
quite
awestruck
by
this
display
of
Krishna's
power
and
opulence.
And
same
with Arjuna.
After he
saw the
universal
form,
he
was
totally
in
awe
and
reverence
and
bowed
down
in full
surrender,
just
like
here.
Because
Krishna
can really
put on
a show.
He
can
put
on
a very
powerful
display
of
some
of his
energies.
And
even
the
materialists,
sometimes
when
something
miraculous
happens,
or
some
great,
nature,
like
the
wonders
of the
world
and
everything,
people
will
respond,
oh
my God.
Although
I don't think
they're thinking
of their God,
but
we know that,
oh
my
God,
oh
Krishna,
this
is
just
a little
spark
of your
splendor.
It's
amazing
what
you
can
do,
but
this is
really
wonderful.
And
we
can
also
have
appreciation
for
that,
that
awesome
display.
But
throughout
history,
we can
see it
in
most cultures,
the
religious
part
of the
culture
is
respecting
and
appreciating
the
awesomeness
of
the
Supreme
Lord.
They're
actually
recognizing
that
there
is
a person
behind
all
this.
It's not
just
the
Big
Bang
theory
that
this just
happened.
No,
there's
someone
pulling
strings
back there.
And
just
the
creation
alone,
just
to think
of it,
is
makes
you
wonder,
who
is
this person?
My
sister
was
just
visiting for
a couple
days
and
trying
to
speak
a
little
philosophy
because
she
does
some
meditation.
I
said,
what
do
you meditate
on?
And she
was
more or
less
in the
mode
of goodness.
She calls
herself
Buddhist.
But,
she
isn't
really
meditating
just
on
getting
better
herself.
But
to meditate
on
a person
was
like,
it's
just not
in her
picture,
although
she
says
God
now and
then, but
missing
out
on
that
awesome,
most
awesome
personality.
Of
course, this
takes
some
humility
to
actually
recognize
that
there
is
somebody
that
better than
ourselves,
someone much greater, and that we should surrender to them. So this is like a very first step that most people just can't take that first step to think that there is that person. But here, Markandeya, he's way beyond that. He's stepped over his false ego, and he's now fully surrendering unto the Supreme Personality of God, and saying that he's taking shelter. And the scriptures say now that there is a shelter. There's a shelter such that everyone can take part, and that is, of course, the Holy Name. That power has been put into the Holy Name, something that's available for all of us. And it truly is, as it says in the scriptures, that it is a perfect place. It's the safest place in the world, kirtan. We know that if something were to happen, I think even on lunar eclipses and everyone goes to the temples, and what do? They chant Hare Krishna. On Ekadasi, although it's an inauspicious day, actually we make it auspicious by chanting more and more. So this is the safest place we can be, and it is our shelter. No matter where we are, whatever we're doing, if we're in jail or we're in Alaska or whatever, we can chant the Holy Name. So this is where Krishna puts his power, and we have that facility. We're so fortunate to have that facility. I mean, in the material world, they make shelters for people that have some disaster. They lose their homes. We read about in California last year, a lot of people had to take shelter because of fires. And I'm sure that when they go in those shelters, they feel some gratitude and thanks for the people that have arranged for this. So in the same way, this bhakti, these temples, learning how to serve Krishna, we should have so much gratitude for this wonderful shelter. And it's like here Markandeya is saying, the fear is gone. We feel that protection in these temples, and we feel the protection in the Holy Name. Some people might criticize and say, oh, you're just escaping, it's a crutch, and all these different things. But I don't think even the materialists, when they go to shelters, feel it's a crutch or anything. It's a shelter. It's a protection. It's no more fear. And this is what Markandeya is experiencing. And in response, he's saying, yes, I just want to stay here. I don't want to leave. This is my shelter. And what can I do to reward you? So he says beautiful prayers to the Supreme Lord. And so in the same way, we come to these shelters, and we should constantly be praying and thanking the Lord for taking us in. And Prabhupada's made such a big shelter. He said that the whole world can just come here. And it's true. People are chanting the Holy Name everywhere, just like we heard this wonderful story of a person just worshiping Tulsi Devi and all of a sudden becoming a devotee. I mean, I have my stories, you have your stories of how I just heard the Holy Name one time and completely changed my life. Such power in just hearing that name. There's so many stories of devotees that, oh yeah, I heard that name. Now I remember, I did hear it once upon a time. I went to a fiddler's convention in college. And at the end of the program, we were all sitting around a fire, chanting our mantras, whatever we believe. I was chanting, we are one, we are one, we are one. And then there were two girls from New York there. I don't know, this is late 60s. And they were chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. I just remember Hare Krishna. I didn't catch on to the mantra. But I remember they were in blue jeans, and they were going around the fire, Hare Krishna, chanting the mantra. Somehow or other, I went home after the weekend, and I got up the nerve to pick up the phone, call my mother, and say, I'm quitting school. I was an honor student. And I said, I have to find out the absolute truth. I just have to. I got to find out what's going on. They said, come home. So I came home. And within, getting a little job for 2 weeks and then heading out west to Colorado to the BNs, I ran immediately into the devotees and became a devotee instantly. So I heard that mantra, and it changed the whole direction of my whole life. So we all have our stories of the power of and the shelter of this holy name. So Unfortunately, there are some people that don't recognize that behind all these wonderful things, these awesome things, that there is a person. And here's, you know, as Prabhupada always did, he points a finger at the scientists and says, you guys, you know, you say you're advancing so much, you're getting so far in this material world, making it nice and comfy, comfy-dory, but you're going nowhere. And you're missing out on everything. They can manipulate things and make it very nice, and we take advantage of those things. We have our electricity, and we have so many, you know, technological, you know, devices, and we take advantage of it, but not for our own, you know, just our own selfishness, but to help advance in Krishna consciousness. But they very happily take the credit. They put their names on all the different theories, and they put their names on all the different things that they've created, and get their patents and get their money, and gladly receive as much, you know, money as they can for more research to learn how to manipulate and exploit these wonderful things that God has given us, that a supreme person has given us. And these people, they lack humility. And they're full of envy, and they disqualify themselves to take the shelter that they ultimately need and the soul really, really wants. They just thicken their ego. They thicken it and make it deeper and deeper by this knowledge, so-called knowledge, that is described here as it's hiding, the illusion is hiding in this so-called knowledge. And it is. But we have real knowledge that is liberating. Here it's saying that we get the benediction if we just hear this, that we can become liberated. So there's so much knowledge that we're receiving right here in this book, just as, you know, just the last few chapters. We can get liberated with this knowledge. But they get deeper and deeper, thinking that they're the doers, the shakers, and the movers of this universe. But their soul is being hidden too. They're not finding out who they really are. And it's very, very unfortunate. But we get the absolute truth, and we get an opportunity to reach perfection in this lifetime. And it always reminds me of the wonderful play, The Scholar and the Boatman. This scholar has been assigned to go to the Bengal area to study the fauna and the biology and the meteorology and everything, to do some more research in this area of the world. And he comes to this strange place and trying to get across the Ganga, and sees some rickety old boat and some little scrawny little guy, and asks him, can you please take me to the other side? And yes, how can I serve you? Yes, you can step in my boat. He says, "Is you sure this boat's all right? I mean, it's looking pretty rickety here. You look pretty scrawny. You sure we're going to make it to the other side?" He goes, come, no problem. Sit down." And the scholar is sitting there, and all of a sudden a bird poops on him, and he looks at it and goes, "Oh my goodness, this is the thrusted, yellow-eared, winged so-and-so, and my dear sir, boatman, have you ever studied, what's it called, ophthalmology or something like that? I don't know. The birds, whatever." And he goes, no, that. But I see those birds every day. They're nice. They sit on back of the cows too. They're really nice cow birds, we call them." And he goes, "Oh, my goodness, you've wasted 25% of your life, dear sir." Okay. Anyway, they're rowing along, and he sees some fish in the water. "Oh, have you studied this biology, and I know what that is. That is the three-horned whatever lives in this part of the country. I'm always so excited. I get to see one. How wonderful! Oh, my life is complete. And you, dear sir, have you studied these? You know what fish are in? You know the name of that fish?" No, I don't know, but I see them every day. They sometimes they jump up, and I see them eat other fish. Yeah, jiva jiva sa jivanam. Yeah, I understand these things." And then he goes, "Well, you've wasted 50% of your life. So this is a shame. Keep rowing. And then he looks, and he looks at the sky. "Oh my goodness, cumulonimbus clouds. My goodness, they're coming. Oh, they're really, really accumulating here, aren't they? My dear boatman, have you studied meteorology? These are wonderful clouds. And he goes, well, it usually means there's a storm coming. And all of a sudden the boats start rocking, and the man is holding on. And he said, you don't know meteorology? 75% of your life. It's just wasted. And then it gets a little rougher and rougher, and the water starts splashing in, and the boatman's losing a little control and saying, oh my goodness, I don't think we're going to make it to the other side. The boat's filling up with water. My dear scholar, do you know how to swim? No, I don't. Well, then you've wasted 100% of your life. And blah, 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 blah. He's gone. So, in the same way, there's so much knowledge, but where will it get you? So we have to study this knowledge and realize that we have to take it to heart because it will save us. It is our shelter. There are just some people that are just know too much. They're just too much, too big for their britches, as it says. That, you know, even spiritually, you know, even one of Srila Prabhupada's servants just wanted too much knowledge. He thought he had more knowledge than Prabhupada, and then he got the benediction that you are never going to have a spiritual master. So we have to be careful too that we have so much knowledge here. I mean, how many times have I read the 12th canto? Not very many times. Some of this is really new to me. So I mean, we have a lifetime of studying all of this knowledge and trying to realize the knowledge. That's a whole nother step, is to, when will we realize this knowledge that we're not this body? So we have plenty to do. We don't have to pile on more knowledge. And Prabhupada was very careful that we didn't, you know, delve too much in unnecessary things. That he gave us what we need. Now we have to really appreciate it and realize that we aren't going to realize the knowledge unless it's been given by someone who has, and that is Srila Prabhupada. So the representative of Krishna also can give that power, that awesome power to us that is available in the holy name and in the hearing of the scriptures. So we have to also thank them to deliver this. Markandeya Rishi here is definitely an example of a person who has perfected yoga. It's not your typical perfection of yoga that you have in these classes, you know, down the road and everything. But perfection of yoga, actually able to sit in meditation for that long, I mean, I definitely could not. Just to sit here for 20 minutes is difficult. What less is focus your mind. But he had paraphernalia. We'll find out later that he has paraphernalia for worshiping Krishna. He was very active, chanting his prayers, I'm sure, chanting mantras, and becoming very transcendental to all that was going on. And he's still here in a Kali Yuga with all this going on. But he's transcendental. He's not affected by any. He must have such control of his senses. But here he's... Lord Shiva is going to see him and ask him, what would you like? This is very austere. And I'm very impressed. What would you like? And what does he ask for? Just unflinching devotion. I mean, I don't know how fixed we are that we would immediately say, that's all I want. Just undivided devotional service. A few other things might come up on the radar that we'd like. But he just doesn't want to forget Krishna. And I was trying to picture what it would be like if we went through one day and we never forgot Krishna for one moment. I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like to remember Krishna all day long. Every single thing you did, you didn't forget Krishna. But that's a sign of a very intense devotion. That Parvati, when they're riding by, they see, wow, there's someone with devotion. There's someone with control and love for the Lord. Let's go down. Let's go see and have darshan of this personality. So this the devotion and remembering Krishna in our activities, that is real perfection of yoga. That's what is going to impress and please Krishna ultimately. Not how much we do, but how much injection of and concentration of Krishna and the desire to please him is there in our service in everything we do. And what does this devotion look like? It looks like that. It looks like the maintenance of this temple. It looks like the devotees going out. And it tastes like the offerings when it's made with love and devotion. Have you ever really tasted an offering that you know that person, it has put everything into that, the devotion as much as possible? You can taste it in that food. You really can. And I'm sure Krishna does. And you can see, you know, the offerings and see the endeavors of the devotees with all their service. And you can feel it. You can feel it in the meticulousness in people that have studied scripture. You can just ask Nanda one question and she can tell you every detail of the Krishna book. Yeah, you just feel that concentration in everyone's service, that attempt to give your best to do something for Krishna. And then Krishna, it's Krishna's turn to be awestruck. And he says he is awestruck by the devotee's love. And he tastes that, and he sees it, and he feels it. And that's what bhakti is all about. It's that reciprocation. We're doing the best we can, and he is taking it, and taking it and not forgetting it. And he's remembering that. Not that we just throw an offering together, that we have get-it-done rounds. Just get it done, you know, as fast as I can, so I can do other things for Krishna. And I know that I'm guilty of, everyone's guilty at times of not putting that devotion in there and just doing it as, you know, boom, boom, boom. I do it. I'm scheduled to do it this day. And the performer also feels a lack. Doesn't taste it as well. I know sometimes when we're waiting for the offering, you know, sometimes it's like down to the very minute, or sometimes people don't show up. Have you ever been in the kitchen and no one showed up to do the offering? Oh my gosh. Everyone's in anxiety. What do we do? And everyone's trying to, and you feel, oh my gosh, you know, that person forgot or whatever, you know, I'm sure he's not feeling good now either. You know, I don't know how auspicious his day is going to be. And it's very important that we take seriously all of our devotional service and put our best foot forward. Right now we're just taking little baby steps in it. We're just little infants. We're just trying to keep, you know, on our feet in devotional service. But with the grace of the advanced devotees, we can begin to learn to make giant steps. And this is, actually, Lord Chaitanya expected us, he offered us to make big giant steps and reach perfection in this age. He gave us everything. He didn't just give us a little bit. He gave us the whole science of bhakti and love of Krishna. So we have to get rid of offenses and take advantage of the process. And start filtering out all these material desires. Here it is, says that the false identity with all those desires just builds that ego. So we have to start filtering, you know, okay, what are all these desires that are weighing me down so I can't take those big giant steps? You know, I've got these weights on me. We got to throw them off and so we can pick up our feet and not be slowed down in our advancement. Of course, Markandeya is a wonderful example. He's no more desires. He just wants that pure devotion. We saw Sudama Vipra, the garland maker, when Krishna visited him, he also got a benediction. What do you want? You know, I just want undivided love. I don't want to ever stop thinking of you. So no tinge of selfish motive. So this is something, you know, we have to take greater steps for as we shed those material desires. Then we can make our desires more and more pure. And that's the power of this bhakti. It's purifying. The process will give us advancement, and we have to have that faith. And we can see. Just look at the Krishna consciousness movement, Srila Prabhupada, and the world is witnessing what this movement has done. It's like Prabhupada said, it's turning hippies into happies. Look at their faces aren't dull anymore. Look at they're bright. And how we're changing so many things in the world. More vegetarianism, more kirtan, more devotion for life. People are more anxious for spiritual life. And we can see all over the world, people have taken shelter of the holy name. Tens and 20,000s of people come to the programs in the places where they never heard of Krishna before. In the Mideast and in the Europe, Western Europe. And look at the welfare work that we're doing for humanity at large. Prabhupada said that this is a wonderful thing. And just becoming gentlemen, respected citizens, all these things are coming out of the power of devotion, out of this purifying process. And even we're taking matter and we're turning it to spirit. We're taking this so-called technology that they're meticulously working on. We're taking it, and we're using it in Krishna's service, and we're turning it into spiritual things. But we're not, can't be totally dependent on it. We have to be more dependent on the holy name. Papa said, I was listening on tape the other day, all you need is your lips, your tongue, and some hands for clapping. That's all you need to really make advancement. But if we can, we use these things and help to display what the shelter of bhakti is to the whole world. And it's all just the hearing and chanting that will satisfy us. And so we have to take shelter and contribute something, participate as much as we possibly can, and to show our gratitude of the shelter. Markandeya Rishi, he's very happy with this benediction of being here till the time of dissolution. I don't know if I would be so appreciative of that benediction. But he is prepared to be transcendental and take advantage of it. So we have to hope that we can survive just the few years that we are left and remain transcendental by taking part in this process. And praying for the advanced devotees to help us. I see more and more that we have to search for those people that will push us forward and to push our desires through those unwanted desires through that filter so we can get rid of them. Otherwise, it's going to be a slow process, and it might take us till the time of dissolution till we get out of here. And purify our desires. So we have some benedictions here at the end of this chapter that we can have some liberation. Hopefully get liberated from some of those desires that forbid us to go further. So maybe some people also would like to contribute some stories of the power of the holy name. Akadasi Puru. Or a question, whatever. Okay. The science of bhakti?
Right. Mm-hmm. Advancing in scientific knowledge, that kind of thing. And so I just spent some time in New York, and outside of the apartment building where I was, there's this big poster, and it says, Dear HIV, everyone's familiar, right? Yeah. With HIV. So, Dear HIV, we haven't forgotten about you. Something along those lines. We're going to get you soon. Love, science.
You might get that one, but there'll be another one.
Yeah, exactly. And I would pass by it all the time, and it made me think of Prabhupada and how he always talks about, the scientists always give you this cheating thing, like, in the future, we're going to do this, we're going to do that.
Post-age. Yeah. Boy, they claim so much.
Um, two little things. One was when you were talking about how, you know, remembering Krishna at every moment. And I've been reading Krishna book before I go to sleep. And so I read something that I don't remember ever reading before, but Prabhupada was saying how, you know, great scholars after many, many births, that they, you know, can enter the rasa dance, become gopis in the rasa dance. But then he said also, someone, even in the material world, who's remembering Krishna at every moment, that they could enter into rasa dance after that, a material birth. And that was really incredible.
It's a tall order. I mean, how long can you think of Krishna? You know?
It's true, it's still.
An just hour at a stretch, maybe.
Just the fact that it was there was kind of encouraging.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to mention is that once we got a call from the temple, and from Haven Hospice, and they said, we have a woman here, and she was at your temple two different times, and she met a woman whose husband's an artist, and another woman whose husband has a clothing store, and she wants them to visit. So Gaur Bhakti and I, we went there, and she'd only visited the temple twice, but she wanted to die with Krishna consciousness. You know, she, like you're talking about shelter. Mm. Some others found enough shelter, so we set up her room, you know, like a temple with pictures everywhere. We had like a tape plane, and so we did like a virtual reality trip to India and circumambulating Govardhan Hill and like that. So
she was conscious?
Not when she left, but before that, you know, we were talking with her and going on the trip and talking about how if she got better, you know, we'd go to India. So also I was just thinking, a plug for the Sunday feast, you don't know that a little time you spend with a new person, that you might think, well, you never saw them again, but you don't know how they're going to carry that with them and how that's going to help them in this life and the next life. So thank you.
Amazing.
For a nice class.
Prabhu, do you know where Markandeya Rishi resides now, and what is he doing?
I have no idea.
Oh, does anybody know?
Might be sitting on the ice in the Himalayas, I don't know.
Markandeya Rishi.
He's certainly
meditating. Yep,
okay.
Meditating.
So throughout your class, you're talking about, you know, taking shelter. So you gave the reference of the material shelter. So I was thinking, you know, like sometimes we would hear on the news of what these shelters are like. You know, like when you have a hurricane or so, you would see how these people are crammed into the shelter. It's not very comfortable. They are with all different people who they never probably met in their life. Sometimes it's a little stinky because of the bathrooms and facilities and whatever, but it's the best place. It's the safest place for them. So I was thinking in a similar way in Krishna consciousness, devotees come from all over the world, all different backgrounds. And when you come, you're taking association and shelter of other devotees, but it's not always for expectation, to like my desire, to my liking. Now, there's always going to be some obstacles. It's not really obstacles, it's more like our individual conditioning that we see it as obstacles. So I was thinking if we can understand that and still see that this is the best place to be, despite what situations might be there, then it can be very
successful.
We
can remember when we were Ramatrinis and 23 people in one room, each person had a little milk crate, that's all we had. And, purifying.
Yeah.
You have to get purified to really appreciate the shelter.
When I first joined the temple, it was like that also.
Yeah.
We were sleeping shoulder to shoulder, and our bags would be, our part would be under our head for a pillow, and the other part would be between the two shoulders. So if you want to go to the bathroom, you have to jump over.
Yeah, sometimes we get together and share our experiences in the ashrams. It would make a bestseller for sure.
I also wanted to tell a story that Dhanavir Maharaj told me one time. You know, he has this doctor program. So they're mainly young boys, 18 and shortly above. So sometimes they would always joke with each other. So one day, that was like a Monday morning after the Sunday feast, a call came in. And it was this voice, a little grumbly, you know, like it's kind of all rusty, a little drunky. So they answered the phone. So one of the devotees answered the phone, one of the young boys. And the voice is saying that, that I really appreciate you, that I'm going to die, but I heard your holy name. But his voice was such that this other devotee starts joking because he thought it was one of the other his friends playing a prank on him. And he said, you're just joking, and don't be so foolish, just come here to do some service. And then the voice said, yes, I was there yesterday and I did some service and now I'm going to die. And he continued his joking way, that after about 5 to 10 minutes into this conversation, he realized that this wasn't his friend that he was talking about, that he thought he was, but wasn't one of the other boys, but it was one of this, it's an older man who indeed came to the temple the day before the Sunday feast for the first time. And the doctor told him the next morning something happened really bad, that yes, he's going to pass away. And he's asking him, can you come? Can you come to see me? I want to see the devotees before I die. And whilst he was trying to get the information from this man, the voice starts cutting down. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't have gotten the full information. And when they did find out, yes, the man actually passed away.
Mm-hmm. I answer letters for Krishna.com, and I was letters going back for almost a year between myself and somebody else, and he was saying his health was real bad and that he was going to die soon. And then they came to the, he kept asking wonderful questions, and then, one day, that was no more letters. So we realize that we have to take advantage of these shelters, and because we don't know. Out there, there's just birth and death, but in here, it's eternal. If we take shelter, hearing these messages and engaging in our eternal occupation, then we're transcendental. We're out of here. So, thank Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.